just go over. So it's a perfect segue because I'm using the same data, so it kind of did some of my work for me. But so I'm going to be looking more differently, different analysis though, at sex risk behaviors and social media use. So kind of where are you meeting your sex partners and how is that impacting your sex risks, and specifically among homeless youth with a history of foster care. So we know that homeless young adults have high rates of engagement in sex risk behaviors, high rates of condomable sex, HIV, concurrent sex partners, and then drug use with sex or exchange sex, exchanging sex for drugs or money or whatever. However, so about 30% of homeless young adults report a foster care history, so they've experienced some form of foster care in their life, compared to only about 4% of the general public. And then between 11 and 36% of foster youth will end up experiencing homelessness at some point in their life. And furthermore, homeless former foster youth don't get a lot of attention in the literature compared to just homeless youth or former foster youth. So I'm looking at the kind of this very specific population. So sex risk among former foster youth, separate from homeless youth, is are among initiating intercourse at earlier ages, so sex at a younger age, greater number of sex partners, infrequent or inconsistent use of contraception, which goes along with the high rate of pregnancy or parenting, and then exchanging sex for money or drugs. Also, generally homeless youth have high rates of social media use. Maybe that's counterintuitive, maybe not. Many of them, most of them, 85% of homeless youth are using the internet at least once a week. That could be the drop-in centers like we were talking about, or another library, things like that. And then more than 80% are using social networking sites, so like Facebook, I think MySpace is in here, but you know, Facebook, Grindr, things like that. And then so specifically, like, what about homeless former foster youth? Like, where do they fit in terms of these risks? We haven't really looked at the impact of partner-seeking behaviors on sex risk among this specific population, but we do know that foster youth, while they share a lot of the same experiences as homeless youth, they don't share all the same experiences, like because they've been in the foster care system. So I'm interested in kind of how these differences play out. It won't move. No. I don't want to push too many things. That went back? Okay. Okay, so the importance of this analysis is really looking at the impact of social media use on sex risk behavior, and specifically targeting risk reduction, so risk of these sexual risk behaviors among former foster youth. So we know engagement in sex risk is high among homeless youth. We're going to focus on former foster youth and the association. We don't really know a lot about the association between social media use and engagement, specifically for homeless former foster youth, even though we have a lot of information about homeless youth and foster youth and kind of some of their activities. So I'm going to be really looking at how social media use is impacting this. This analysis specifically is going to be using the risk amplification and abatement model, so looking at who these kids are connecting with. Are they connecting with negative socializing agents, so other kids who are using drugs or engaging in sex risk? Are they engaging in positive? So it's not so much about a positive or negative person, it's kind of a positive or negative action that this person is engaging in. But essentially, engaging in people with kind of these negative contacts is going to increase their likelihood of engaging in those same kind of actions. So basically, if you're hanging out with people who are engaging in risky sex, you're more likely to engage in risky sex. And I'll move on. So the youth at NAIA, like Dr. Rice was talking about, so he looked at wave one and wave two. This is a baseline. So 1,000, a little over 1,000 of all of those youth, regardless of wave, so I'm not splitting it by wave, that were interviewed at baseline. So they didn't have a follow-up, or I'm not including their follow-up interview, I'm just looking at their baseline. All the youth accessing services at these drop-in centers were invited.
And I'm really looking at characteristics of the individual rather than like the network density or something like that. You went over this exactly. So generally responses across all the waves in both the sites ranging from about 74 to about 94%. So the variables I used. Foster care experience I use as a dichotomous variable. So simply, were you or were you not in the foster care system at some point? Sex risk behaviors, I used anal sex without a condom, vaginal sex without a condom, drug use with sex, exchange sex, but then I also combine variables, so or concurrent sex partners, but then I also combine variables, so any sex with a condom, any sex without a condom. And where was my last partner met? Social networking site like Facebook or MySpace, so online dating, Craigslist, an app like Grindr, so anywhere... any social media site where somebody might be looking for, not any, but a range of them, where people might be looking for a partner of some sort. So this is the basic demographics. So I took that 1,046, and these 352 are the foster youth only. Okay. So average age of about 21, looking at largely male, largely heterosexual. This includes both sites, like I said, so you can see that it's kind of an even split between African American and white, even though we know that one site had a lot, they are differences between sites. Average years homeless is about 4. So this includes 14 to 25 year olds, so you can work with that. Where did you meet your last sex partner? So these are not meant to add up to 100%, it's kind of just an idea of where these kids are meeting their sex partners. And 75%, 3/4 are meeting on social networking sites like Facebook. We've got not as many in drop-in centers. You can see even though we're taking this data from a drop-in center, that's not really where they're meeting their sex partners. A public place, that could be like a bar or a restaurant or any kind of place somebody might patronize. And then, again, a lower number for school or work if they're in those places. And then sex risk. So of the former foster youth, we have about 43% are engaging in vaginal sex without a condom. High rates for any condomless sex in general, so about 60%. We've got still 40% that are using condoms, but about 60% that are not regular, or they're not using condoms at their last sexual exchange. And then about 44% using drugs, and a high number for concurrent sex partners also. The bottom right there is kind of what I'm interested in, and should say condomless sex, but about 43% of these former foster youth met their last sex partner through a social networking site and engaged in unprotected sex. So I'm really looking at that kind of 43% demographic here. And then, so I took that demographic, this unprotected sex and meeting last sex partner online, kind of who are they? So they are still kind of same age, mostly male, largely heterosexual, a little bit longer time homeless. Their age of first foster care placement is about 9. Obviously, there's a large standard deviation. And foster care placement, so we got over half of them are over 5 placements. So that ranges, well, that ranges really anywhere up. There's no end point. About 40% have been on probation. And this is what they use the internet for. They use it for finding friends, finding partners other than sex partners, and about a third are using it for finding partners or drugs. Their last partner largely was considered a boyfriend or girlfriend, self-report. But about a third are for hookups. And you can see how long they've been with this last partner. About half have been, no, more than that. Majority have been 6 months or less with the same person, so it's not necessarily a long term. About a third are in a relationship with this person for longer than a year. And then largely, you know, an equal split kind of between age for sex at between 11 and 13 and 14 to 16. Which makes sense. So then I just looked at some correlations with this condomless sex variable and what these kids are using the internet for and what kind of sex risks they're involved in. And I focused in on, I mean, the significant ones, of course, but they're using the internet largely
there's a negative association with finding partners, a negative association for finding drugs, and a positive association for the length of time, so the longer time you've spent with your sex partner. So I took these significant results basically and entered them into regression. So I do want to highlight the controls that were added only because generally some of these controls tend to muck things up a little bit, like time homeless is a large impact, but in this case I decided to throw them in to try and control for them. So I'm controlling for partner status. It does not, you know, I'm not interested in hookup versus boyfriend, even though those are important. I'm controlling for that here, as well as time homeless and agent versus foster care placement and number of foster care placements, partially because there's understandably a lot of interest around how old a youth was when they were placed in foster care, how many placements they've had, and so I'm trying to kind of take that out of the equation for just the time being. And we have adjusted odds ratios. So the length of time you've spent with your last sex partner increases your odds for having unprotected sex with this partner that you met on a social networking site. And decreased odds with both drug use with sex and concurrent sex partners with having unprotected sex with a partner from a social networking site. So what does that mean? Longer time with a current sex partner could be seen as a risk factor. Maybe you're with somebody longer and you think you don't need to use condoms. And then the impact from the perception of risk. So perhaps youth that are using drugs with sex and they have concurrent sex partners, they are maybe already worried about HIV or STIs, and so they're using condoms. So not protective, but maybe it's just an increased awareness of the risks that are associated with that. So engagement in other risky behaviors may encourage youth to use condoms with sex with partners met on a social networking site. Maybe they don't know them very well and they assume, you know, this is a person I need to use a condom with because I don't know them. Whereas having sex for a longer amount of time with your current sex partner may think, you know, there's an illusion of safer sex going on. So targeting interventions, education, of course, around safe sex practices, but specifically around safe sex practices with a longer-term partner. You know, what does that look like? Looking at harm reduction models. So is that, you know, those youth that are already using drugs with sex or they have concurrent sex partners, like, you know, encouraging condom use. They are doing that, but kind of an encouragement of reducing the amount of harm that they could be doing to themselves.
Thank you to all the presenters. We'll take questions now. If you would just make sure that you project your voice on both directions. Anyone have any questions?
Down low guys, and the others, these more, bisexual girls, they're definitely, they've got some sexist behaviors that are unique to them, and also they tend to be, not surprisingly, more likely to be connected to one another than to the heterosexual mother. They're more likely to be connected to each other. So that they can, within these larger networks, there are sub-cliques of essentially LGBT kids, and particularly, gay boys, lesbian girls. The bisexual girls, however, tend to not be necessarily, they are hanging out with one another, but they seem to be more integrated into the larger sort of heterosexual networks. They're less marginalized. So those are some of the things that we found that it's really preliminary stuff at this point.
I was just interested because we work with transgender. I have a place in New York, which is a service provider in Florida. And we work with the health and law community. And we use one of your interventions here, the popular opinion leader.
Sure.
And but the problems we find is that it's hard to tie them down long enough because of the transit. So they attend a ball in New York, and then they're attending another ball in Atlanta, so they're all over the country pretty much, and they couch surf, the usual stuff. But it's just very hard to keep them long enough that we wonder if we make a difference,
I think that's a huge question that we need to be asking when we're thinking about popular opinion leader interventions. I mean, I think the ones that have worked well, were launched in gay bars, in relatively stable communities where you have a relatively stable group of men who are going to those venues every week, or even if they're not going every week, they're showing up a couple times a month or something. I mean, there's some stability for those populations, primarily because they're men who have jobs and whereas the population that you're talking about, the House and Ball community, or my population, particularly the beach kids who are the part that's traveling homeless youth population that jump on trains and go from city to city, I mean, they're just not in any one place for very long. And so, but they are connected to one another in this national sort of scene, but I don't know how lasting those relationships are because, we didn't look at it too much in these data, but the length of these relationships aren't particularly long either. I mean, these are people that they've known for a couple of months, a few weeks. These aren't people that they've known for years. So it's hard when they're transient. Going up They're getting their clothes, they're getting their service, they're getting their, you know, their lunches, they're talking to the staff about whatever it is that they need, and they're trying to stay away from these other homeless youth, particularly those ones that are all deeply interconnected, because those ones are deeply interconnected in some of the other papers that I've done. And they're having unprotected sex, they're using meth, they're habitual and habitual and problematic marijuana users. I mean, it's like, you know, all of these young people have smoked marijuana at some point in their life, basically. But like, the ones who are in the middle of these networks are smoking marijuana several times a day. You know, whereas the ones that are more towards the edges are a little bit less problematic. And I think that, you know, there's some self-protection that some of these young people who are really trying to actively get off the streets are doing by not getting involved in these networks. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of a funny thing, because I think when we think about adolescent networks in general, we think about people who are on the margins of those networks as being high-risk individuals. Like, I know there was some stuff with the Ad Health study that was done several years ago that said basically if you're in an intransitive space in a network, you don't have a lot of friends, or your friends aren't friends with one another, you're more likely to be suicidal. But in this network, it's the opposite. You know, the more connected you are, the more behavioral health problems you have. Hogging the stage. Does anyone have any questions for anyone else? I'll answer the three questions, I'm sure. By way of sort of condom attitudes questions, like why were you using the condoms that you were using? It's much more just, I'm sadly, I'm a sociologist by training, so I think about, like, did you do something or not? Not why did you do something?
Sure.
We didn't ask that. I mean, we did ask some questions about whether or not you thought getting pregnant was something that would be detrimental to you. So we have some interesting work about, we have a paper that think out now that's looking at sort of pro-pregnancy attitudes that a lot of these homeless youth have. But that's sort of about the extent of that work.
And the other two things I wanted to ask you, if you included, or if you look at the correlation of sexual abuse between race and condom use, and also the risk of these youth engaging in prostitution or human trafficking and then being across situations.
Yeah, so we do get into both of those issues in these data. The sex trafficking one, you know, we didn't ask explicitly, you know, have you been trafficked? We asked a much more generic, you know, are you involved in exchange sex, which is sort of a more prevalent issue for this population. I wish that we had done something more specifically on sex trafficking, because as far as I know, there's not really any quantitative work on sex trafficking per se with homeless youth, even though we know anecdotally that it definitely is out there and it's happening. The correlation with so we asked a lot of stuff about trauma, and so we asked things about both trauma before you became homeless as well as traumatic experiences that happened to you once you're on the streets, and Amanda's looking at some of that stuff in this study, mostly as control variables, and I have another student who's really looking at it within the context of depressive symptoms more so than sexual risk taking, but that's certainly something that, particularly as Amanda's interest in foster, former foster youth, that she's been looking more into. So, if you want to, I don't know, you should talk to Amanda about that stuff more. She's looked at it more than I have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question for Amanda, and I'm sorry if I'm late, so maybe you can answer this.
Sure. So 60%, I guess, of the cell phones.
So that would make it easier for them to find.
Oh, sure. Online. For sure.
And then what's your sense of the ones that don't have cell phones finding people online?
Well, I mean, like, these kids, for example, like, if they're in a drop-in center, they can use the internet. You can use the internet in drop-in centers, libraries, things like that. So I mean, there are a plenty of opportunities for them to use the internet, even if we might think
you know, you don't have a computer. Like you said, cell phones are really prevalent.
Yeah, I think the main issue with the cell phone, with the internet access for homeless youth is not that they don't have access, they just don't have a lot of access. So that, you know, if you ask them how often they're online, you only get like 20% of them that'll say they've been online for more than an hour a day, which is, you know, way less than with like a housing population. But in terms of, you know, do you get on the internet, you know, at least once a week, they almost all are on the internet at least once a week. So it's a little bit more, yeah, so there's access, but it's limited. Young people are actually being tested. I mean, they should probably all be getting tested.